Hi, I'm Sarah, I'm an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
Oh dear, I am feeling quite nervous. I'm really quite hot and I feel vulnerable. I feel that people can see right through me and I feel quite uncomfortable just sitting here. But it isn't about me, it's about a message of hope. And, you know, that's what I found in these rooms is, you know, love and message of hope. You know, hope is what I got from the very first meeting that I went to. So I just, like, get a bit shaky in my body. My adrenaline really starts pumping through me and just about staying present and, you know, high power. It's my birthday today, so... Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I shouldn't cry because it's my birthday, but really my journey, I suppose, for me coming in to the rooms, as the previous speaker spoke about, kind of like I'm very different to how I was when I first came into NA, and I've grown and changed so much through the process of recovery. My denial, my self-centeredness, my manipulation, my shutdown, just running on self-will and full-blown addiction and not really knowing that there was ever any other way. Excuse me, my eye's twitching, so I'm not winking at anyone, so please don't think the boys think I'm winking at them. It's like, oh, God. It's like, what's happening there? I don't know. That's just all right, though. We just roll with that. I don't know, yeah. just this kind of... I was so driven in everything that I did. And basically, you know, I wound up nowhere else to go, just a pest, really, a nuisance to myself and everybody around me. And it was like last stop saloon, really, ending up here. And I really did think... Oh my God, how have I ended up here? And I used to sit in meetings with my head down, like shame, shame. I couldn't look at anybody. And I was really desperate. I was really desperate. Because I knew that I was broken. I felt really broken. And I don't just mean mentally broken. I mean, physically, emotionally, I didn't have any understanding of any concept of spirituality, but I just felt like I'd been broke. And I'm sure you've all experienced that same feeling of total despair. And, you know, I suppose for me, I'll tell you a bit about myself, kind of this kind of, where I come from and kind of my blueprint for life, really, what I was kind of off and running with. My my parents, you know, they're like addicts. My dad was in and out of prison and he was very violent and used to drink to blackout, and my mum was heavily on I don't know what, but she would always be asleep, she would always be in bed. She, you know, we didn't have kind of no routine, no boundaries, no internal boundaries, we just didn't have anything like that. And so my childhood, I spent a lot of time on my own. I remember just kind of, but in that there was loads of excitement. It was just really weird. There was just this thing of just kind of going out there and nobody actually saying you can't do this or you can't do that or you can't go there, because I would just be off and out like a street urchin, just doing kind of things, finding things, sparkly things, shiny things. I was very attracted to things like that, you know, even as a kid, and wanting things and just taking things, and running with that kind of that desire just to take and want and get and search. So we're kind of like stealing, lying, that all just come really, really, it was something that I grew up with. It's a learned behaviour. I mean, you know, I was around that kind of stuff. I grew up in that kind of thinking, even though I obviously didn't realise I was taking it all in subconsciously, but I was. It kind of like you'd sit down on our couch and you'd get like a piece of toast stuck to your... I won't swear. Do you know, it's that kind of stuff. Oh, you know, yesterday's breakfast or whatever was... It was, and there was always people in and out and loads of chaos and rowing and fighting and... And it'd be like walking through somewhere, you'd kind of just be ducking because you'd probably get a clip round the ear, or my mum would kind of say to me for something for me that she'd want me to do. And, you know, I got growing up with a lot of that shame, you know, because she didn't even go out and get the shopping. She used to give me a list and send me up the shop with this list, but with no money. And the terror that I used to feel for going in this shop and not having the money to buy what was on the list. And even at that early age, that just looking around, like I'm thinking, well, who's gonna sort this out? Who's gonna cut? Like, I don't know what I was expecting or waiting for, but thinking somebody somewhere is gonna come and do something, you know, is gonna sort something out. And I would just stand outside the shop and kind of build up the, you know, whatever it was, and then it'd be right. In you go, and then the little bell would ring on the door, and I'd think, oh no, somebody's come in. Oh, and you know, I'd kind of feel really fearful and just like paralysed, that just paralysed of just like being frozen. Like nobody can see you, but they can see you, that kind of feeling. And give him the list, and she couldn't spell either. Not that, because I can't spell, you know what I mean? But you know, I remember just certain things she put on the list, and but what I'm trying to say is that kind of going out into the world and doing that stuff and then taking it back, and then she'd get whatever, she'd get her money, and then I'd go back and, you know, she'd knock the tick off and, you know. But I felt really uncomfortable. I never liked doing that stuff, you know what I mean? I just felt... and that rescuing, even at that early age, so I was kind of... I didn't realise it then, but I was rescuing her and rescuing a lot, and... So that just gives you a little bit of kind of the snippings of what it was all about. And I had no sense of self. I had no sense of to feel or to think, or I didn't feel safe in anything. So I found obviously ways probably to act out whatever it was. So, you know, stealing was just, I used to get like a real buzz from it, you know what I mean? It just, I don't know, just to take me out of myself. And plus, I just wanted something, so I just took it. And I thought, yeah, it's fair dues, you know, it was like, that was how it was. So kind of growing up with that, I learned how to, what I'm saying is I learned how to lie, cheat, steal and manipulate. All those things were in me. And yeah, no, I was off and running. So basically, just a bit about that. She kind of she couldn't look after three kids, and she met a guy, and he was a well, you know, it turned out he was a paedophile, and he'd kind of moved in with us, and you know, it was all kind of like quite tragic and traumatic, my childhood, and there's a lot of the stuff that I don't remember, and you know, it's all kind of a lot of it shut down, and. That's all right, you know, I've learned to uncover a lot of the layers of who I really am and where a lot of my madness, my wonkiness, my sadness comes from. So I, off and running, I got basically taken into care, and I literally went from no routine, dirty, smelly, to this house, and they had everything, you know, and I have to move this because it's really uncomfortable. Yeah, and just having stuff there and dresses, and it was a really kind of big house, and suddenly everyone had a routine to go into the bathroom, and I just remember just feeling like absolutely lost and powerless, that I was just stuck in this place. And yeah, I found it really, really difficult, and I used to go and sit in my room, and they would say, come sit downstairs, come sit downstairs, and I'd think, but I don't want to sit downstairs, I don't want to sit with anybody, I just want to sit on my own. So even what I'm saying is, even as an early age, I used to want to isolate. I don't even know why. It was just a nothingness, or just an isolation, that something that maybe I felt a safeness in just being on my own. But it was the very thing that would lead me to, you know, to a very, very dark place, was that desire to be on my own. I can deal with the world, I'm a survivor, I'll just keep cracking on. So I kind of grew up and drink and, you know, came along. And, I remember being at a friend's party and I drank and I chucked up all over her mum's flowers. And they put me to bed and, I was like, whoa. But it just, there was just something in it, that just this pure escapism that I was just like, wow, this is all right. I like this. This is going to work for me. So I was off and running with alcohol and drink and boys, really, kind of that kind of attention. And as I progressed into my journey of kind of growing up, I was young, I'm from the seaside. I mean, I used to bunk off school, I used to go down the arcades all the time. You know, my foster mum would say to me, like, you know, get home, your dinner's on the table, da 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 da. But I just didn't get it. I would lose all sense of time and I would just be stuck down these arcades and, you know, I literally would think, what is your problem? You know, what is your problem? I am playing Pac-Man, you know what I mean? It's like, this is where it's at, you know. But I didn't say it to her, obviously. But it was, that kind of denial of not being able to really see or have no sense of what was really going on, but really being so scared and frightened of everything and everybody. So I just found my own way of and whatever I rolled into or found me was, let's try that, you know. I wasn't frightened by taking these risks and putting myself in situations. It was just something that I did, and it was only afterwards or while I was in it, I just think, oh, how did I get here? This is a bit heavy, or, you know, this isn't what I thought it would be. Kind of as I grew up, cut a long story short, you know, I kind of left my foster parents when I was 16 on a real, real load of rebellion. And I think, you know, you hear people say in the rooms that kind of putting your foot down on the button and just off and running. And I was off, and I was off. And, and I left them. And there's a story to that, but, you know, it's too long to go into and stuff. But basically, I ended up in a bedsit and, and I lived in Margate. And my one desire was to get out of Margate. That was the plan, the big plan, and it was a plan. And I planned, because I used to think of all these different things. And, the things my mind would come up with, you know, some of this crazy stuff, but some of it did pan out, some of it happened, you know. And so I had this plan, and I went and trained to be a croupier. That was the plan. My eyes twitching again. And go to London. That was it. Just get out of here, you know, because there was nothing there for me, and that was all I wanted to do. So it was like this kind of runaway, and I had no one telling me what I can do, where I can go, and I loved it. You know, I loved that freedom of that sense of you know. And also, I just didn't, you know, I wouldn't accept anybody trying to tell me anything at all. Or you could tell me and I would kind of nod, or I'd kind of, look at you like, I'm really going to do that. And there'd just be this other side to me that would just be laughing inside, you know, kind of like, I'm not going to do that. And what I'm trying to say is what we learn about when we come in here, that complete Jekyll and Hyde, that being two different people, but not knowing when I was who and what would happen when I was in those, whatever, when I was in those places, and not being able to protect myself a lot of the time within that. So kind of up and running, and just running and running. I don't even know where I was running from. Do you know that? I have no idea. I was running from myself. I was always running from myself. It was like I've only actually caught up with who I am and caught up with myself since I've been in recovery. I've actually kind of got in my body is what I'm talking about. I'm actually present. I'm not in some kind of psychotic psychosis or on some kind of fantasy-driven trip. So anyway, I trained up to be a croupier. I got myself a boyfriend who kind of dealt, you know, he was the local drug dealer, and I thought, yep, this is great. And off we went to London, and that's where we moved. And within that kind of world and where that took me and where it travelled to was, it was, you know, for somebody that, where I come from, it was really glamorous. There was a side to it that was really glamorous, and it was out and it was dancing and working in casinos, and I'd be up all night working, and then I'd come home and we'd sit there and sniff and sniff and sniff and talk a load of you know what, and then be, you know, and off I'd go. But I was so young that I could just keep bouncing back. It was like, I could just bounce back, you know, and just keep going. It was just... that's how I felt. You know, when I did cocaine, it was like one of those jack-in-the-boxes. You know, one of the things, you press it and it just goes bang. That was what I did. It was like, whoa, and that was it for me. But it was pure escapism. It was. It just was. And it was what I relied on. It's what I trusted. It was my gateway to manoeuvre myself into people, places and things. Which is the total reverse today, but that's what the truth of it was, really. The drugs were kind of like, they gave me this mask, and they gave me all this, what I thought, this kind of grandiosity and bravado, and they gave me a false sense of self and an ego that kind of just kept all the damage real down there, and you couldn't really see it, you know? And I didn't really dip into it anyway. It was only at the end of the road, when I finally, the drugs didn't work for me anymore. It was like, wow, I never thought that, you know, it was only when they brought me to my knees, but I honestly thought they'd just keep working. I never imagined that they would stop working. I was like, that is a place to get to. That is like, whoa, that is like a different dimension. It's like, what's happened here? Like, everything I've always relied on, it just doesn't work. So that kind of... just having it beaten out of me, really. Just having it all beaten out of me. I kind of got the job, was up and running. And again, like, there's always been two sides to me. You would think, what a lovely girl. She's a great girl. She really is. And then the other destructive side would show up and you'd be like, whoa, it's like, you know, I got, yeah, I mean, and not only that, you know, my kind of like lifestyle and the way that I've been brought up, and, you know, I had nothing. So it was like, I just went out with, and whatever I could get, I got, you know, and it was just, I didn't just use drugs, I used people and people used me. It was like the trade-off. It was the unspoken language of the world, and that was the world I lived in, and that's what it's all about. And learning to hustle here and, you know, kind of manipulate there, and as long as I had that bag of gear, I was all right, really, because that's what the main thing of it all was. I could be all that you wanted me to be, but I needed this in order to be like that. Anyway, I got pulled in the office for going AWOL, actually. They rang me up and I was in the pub at work, and he said to me, I've shared this, so people who know me, I'm sorry, he said to me, are you an alcoholic? Like, he pulled me in the office, and I was like, I was absolutely mortified. I was like, what a cheek. I couldn't believe it. And I was just like, I felt like I said, listen, mate, I'm on the shuffle. You know what I mean? I'm on the... How dare you? This is what I was sat there with. But of course, I was sitting there, like, crying, because I'm so good at turning on the tears and fluttering my eyelids. I usually got away with it, you know what I mean? But anyway, he was, like, a bit tough. He was a bit tough, and... you know, he really gave me a bit of a telling off, and I didn't like that. So I came downstairs with my lovely long green dress, which was vile, and chucked it over the side. And I went out, and I went in the pub, and I had a fag, and I started drinking a couple of glasses of wine, and I just got straight on the phone, and I was like, right, let's have it, that's it. And I was off again. And so that kind of, like, what I'm trying to say, everything, anything that was ever good, I set up or I managed to get, but it was always like this other part of me was going, you know I'm going to come out, you know I'm going to take this, you know, and I'd be like, you know, just trying to manage it all the time, just trying to function, and hopefully no one would tell that I was a real fraud, you know, because that's what I always felt like, a complete and utter fraud, and that everybody could see through me. And if you could see me, all my insides are hanging out and they're dragging around the floor. And so I'll just have a bit more, you know what I mean? Yeah, painful place. It's just like having no sense of self and building up just a complete, entire personality. And it's only when that rug is completely pulled from under you that it's just like, wow, you realise just what a mask, just like how much you can go with this stuff and what you can build and, you know, how numbed out I really was to life. And as my life progressed, I went, you know, the rave scene and all of that kind of kicked off. And, you know, I just remember being at Rain Dance and being utterly out of my brain. And I actually thought I'd died and gone to heaven. You know what I mean? It was that feeling. And people were giving each other watches and coats. And, you know, it was like, it was like, whoa. It was lovely. Everyone loved each other. I was like, wow. And I run with that, you know, I run with that for a long time. And I had another drug dealer boyfriend who just used to come up and put money in my jacket. I used to have this coat on and I'd be dancing, like, in hot pants in this jacket, and he'd just keep coming over and whacking this money in the coat. And, just mad stuff. And so kind of like as it progressed for me, What I found was that the people and places and things started to change for me, and, you know, I kind of, like, progressed into that world. And, you know, kind of for me, I ended up in Spain, and I lived out there with another criminal, and I was good at picking them. And, yeah, you know, and he just used to buy me all these clothes and, you know, whatever I wanted, he'd just buy it for me. And it was like, wow, it was like shopping every day and sniffing coke every night. And, you know, and but there's a real sad side to that stuff, you know. And so cut a long story short, by then I was like freebasing and, you know, I've been on a binge for three days, I don't even know. It'd gone on and on and on and on. You know, when you kind of burning your nails and oh man, it was like scary stuff. And I collapsed, I just went over. My whole body like was paralysed, you know, that kind of like, I couldn't move. And I had terrible, terrible pains in my heart, and everyone was freaking out, like proper freaking out. And I just thought, oh, that's it, I'm gone, that's it. And all I kept thinking about was my little boy. And there was a teddy, and I was just kept looking at his teddy, and I don't even know what it was that I was like, but something was just like, please help me, you know, it was like, it wasn't my time, I didn't want to go. And I don't know, it was just something in me. I was like 25, and that was my first rock bottom. And my partner just kept shouting at me, just shouting at me, and I just thought, I've got to leave you, you know, I've got to get out of here, I've got to go, you know, this is like, it was getting really scary, and then the people that he was mixing with, and the people that, you know, it was all like, the fun and games, and the, you know, that was over. It was a different side of life, and it was coming, and being, you know, it was coming very, very close to some naughty stuff, and I just thought, wow, and some of the stuff he was coming out with was completely insane. I mean, insane. And I was bonkers, you know what I mean? But I used to sit there night after night on my own, and it was like somebody, because he'd be going out doing what he was doing, and I'd be in the pot, and I'd just think, leave it on the side. And it was just like, Sarah, you know I'm here. You know you want me. It's like, he just used to call me all the time. It was like, all the time, it just used to like speak to me and really seductive. And I think, oh, I'll just have a little bit. He won't notice. He won't notice because I've got that pot and I'd tip it out. Anyway, I'd look at the pot and I'd be all twisted up and mangled up. And, oh, it was disgusting. And then I'd think, shit, what am I going to do? Because he's going to see how much has gone. And so I'd get out the Andrews and I'd fucking mix it up. Oh, yeah, that's all right. That looks proper good. That's all right. Anyway, you know, it was mad. And anyway, he'd come in and he'd be sitting there. Anyway, his nose, like, it was all a bit red and sore, you know what I mean? And I was like, you really want to turn that in? I said, you've got a problem. I was so naughty. But what can I do? What can I do? And I know it's terrible, but I used to think, yeah, I've got one up on you. I've got one up. I'm sleeping, all that stuff. I did. It was mad. It's like I was getting my own back because he was out kind of sleeping with loads of other women, which, you know, all that stuff, you know what I mean, kind of what was going on. And there's me kind of madness. Anyway, I took off. I took off. Yeah, I did this. I had this really kind of great formula that has always been with me. It's like just quickly pack a bag or a case, whatever it is, and just go. That's it, you know what I mean? And that's what I did. And he come in and he was like, you leave me, you're not leaving me. And it was all that stuff, and I had it all planned, and off I went. And, you know, I did that stuff a lot, and people who know me know, you know, I don't say it in a funny way, but it was, you know, but it was just something I've always had. I don't even think it's a skill, but... You know, I left a boyfriend when I asked him to go and get a video and a Chinese because I thought that would give him some time. And, yeah, thanks. And I left him while he went out. I left him. I just upped and run, and it was like a mad mission to get out of there. And it was clones scattered everywhere, and off I ran. And I've never seen him since. But this is what I'm talking about. This stuff would unpack wherever I went. It was like the problem was me, and I couldn't do intimacy, and I couldn't do relationships, and I couldn't stay still, and I, you know, I just couldn't. And I was often running into something else. So my story is basically that I just kept going and kept going until I kept having these rock bottoms. And by then I had a son, and then I came back from Spain. And I moved to Essex and went straight, you know, out, as you do. And, yeah, I met another criminal in a pub, you know, one of the villains round there. And it was like, you know, off I go again. It was like, but what I'm saying, it was all living in me. I didn't understand, like, what I was giving out and what was happening. And it would just be, and I had nothing. I had no money. I had nowhere to go. I had no family. There was nothing. It was like, what I am and what who I am is, this is it. You know what I mean? And I was going to roll with that. There was nothing else for me to... There was nothing else there. You know, there's nothing else in the tank, you know. Anyway, I went to a party and he said, do you want to move in? And I said, what a great idea. So I moved in. And off that went, you know, running with this like lifestyle of, you know, just buying me a car and... rings and jewellery and all that stuff, and you know, but I had no power. I had no power, and it was all his money, and it was all his control, and it was all that. And I got myself into a really bad place again, and I would just literally be at it all the time, and he'd be taking sleepers, and I'd just keep going and going, and he'd hide it from me, and I'd find it, and off I'd go again, and and you know, he gave me a telling off. I mean, he probably gave me the worst telling off I've ever had in my entire life. And I've had some telling offs, let me tell you. But this one was the mama of all mamas, you know what I mean? And he said to me, you're a junkie, you're ill, you're really ill. And I did, and I said, it's like the devil, I need to be exercised. I mean, I was really, really... There was this something that just lived in me. And anyway, cut a long story short, I ended up ringing the Samaritans when he went out. And I rang the Samaritans and spoke to them, and somebody gave me a number. And I got through to someone, and then I got through to this lady, and she was a 12-step person, and she was on the other end of the phone for me, and I was just started talking to this woman. And this woman said to me, "You need to come to Chelmsford. You need to drive to Chelmsford, and I'll meet you at the station, at the petrol station, and I'll take you to a meeting." My friend had to drive because I couldn't drive by then. I mean, I used to have anxiety attacks and panic attacks, and my hands were all sweaty. And this woman met me at the meeting, and I went to my first meeting and in the Priory in Chelmsford. And I just remember just feeling just utterly. I don't even know. I just don't know what I felt. I just had, nothing and nowhere else to go. And this woman just, she was just, I don't know, she just put her arms around me and basically gave me hope. And I found a new way of, I found a new way to live. And this woman who's like, I've never had a relationship, I hadn't had a proper relationship with a woman up until that point. Like a real, I'm talking, somebody that genuinely cares from one woman to another about me. And she took me to one side, thanks, and this woman ended up being my sponsor. And, you know, basically, she guided me through. I left that relationship. He took back the money, he took back the rings, he took back the watch, and he took back the car. I was like, "Do you really need to take the car? Seriously? Really?" I was like, anyway, I won't tell you what I said, but anyway. And this woman, and I stayed with a friend, and I went and signed on. You know what I mean? I went and signed on. And so I put everything down. I put absolutely everything down, the people, the places, the things. And I had nothing. I didn't, you know, do you know what I mean? And I had this woman, and I had meetings, and people kept saying to me, "Keep coming back." And some of these people who are in this room today, you know, people just like held me, took me for coffee, loved me. I don't know, I've never ever been loved like I have been. And until I turned up in NA, I'm talking about genuine love. I'm talking about real compassion. I'm talking about depth. I'm talking about people who care. People who care. They don't want to see you. People who care about my well-being. And these people have put me back together. And you know, they've held me, and through all the things that have happened to me in recovery, I've got two amazing, beautiful children that absolutely I adore. I would do absolutely anything for my kids. And they've got their mum today, you know. They've got me. I've got them. I've been through the steps. I'm going back through them. I've learned to surrender on a lot of levels through the program, because my high power has guided me and shown me the areas that needed to be worked on. And what I've always found in that actually putting stuff down, it was just blocking me. You know, it was just like carrying another weight around my neck. Anyway, so this woman is still my sponsor today. And so she showed me, and what I learned in NA was to keep coming back. And people kept saying to me, "Keep coming back, keep coming back," because I was a habitual relapser. And but she never, ever turned her back on me. And the people in NA, the doors were always open. People always said to me, "Welcome back, you'll get it." And I was like, "Get what? Get what? You'll get it in a minute." I had no concept when I came in. I was like, "What are you talking about?" You know? But I got it. I've got it. I've got it. I've got it. She's got it. Wow. She's got it. And the strength that I've got, and growing up, and to finally be comfortable, even though I get uncomfortable, to be vulnerable, but to say this is who I am, and You know, I can finally start to say that I love myself today. I've always felt less than, unlovable, awkward, fearful. And I still get all of that stuff, but you know what? I've got like this loving higher power that's just kind of just nudges me and say, you know, because I know that it wants the best for me. And what I found in recovery is like gold. Anyone who's new about is you just got to keep working at this stuff. You just got to keep surrendering. You just got to keep at it. You know, people will open their arms, their hearts, everything. I'm proof of what this program's about. I've got, I may not have any family or I've got my children, but what I mean is I found like I came in here with nowhere to go. And I found this family, you know. I've got amazing friends, you know, and I've got people that step up who've got the minerals today. They've got the minerals to step up to the plate and give me what is best for me in that situation. And I'm not talking about material things. I'm talking about love and being open to that and being open to receive it. And it's funny, you know, I'll just share a little story. I was with the snow a couple of weeks ago and I was stuck in Essex on a hill. And I couldn't get up the hill, right, and it was dark. And I sat there and I was like, oh, please, higher power, get me home. Get me home, get me home. So I sat there and then there's these people, Essex boys in their suits in fun and they're pushing the car all over the place. Like, shiny shoes are all kind of going everywhere. And they're pissed and, you know, like just going. And I just sat there and I thought, oh, so I got my phone out, right? And I just put this message, like, up that I was stuck on the hill. Anyway, and it's just like this stuff is bizarre. So I'm sitting there, right, and I'm saying, please get me home, please get me home. And the car started smelling and the rubber had burning where I'd kind of really tried to get up and the car just wouldn't go any further. And this guy come out and pushed these other guys and they were starting to get up the hill. Kind of like what my recovery's been like. You know, sometimes I really need a good push. And anyway, I've looked out the window. Oh, my life. I've looked out the window. And there's Robin, right? Just this fella dressed up as Robin. I've looked out the window. Right? And I can't swear, but Batman was there, right? I was like, have a look at this. Have a look at this. Anyway, I'm laughing. My friends in recovery's rung me, right? Are you all right? Are you all right? I said, you ain't going to believe this. You ain't going to believe it. And with that, my brake light has gone on in the back of the window and I can see the emblem, or whatever it's called, on this guy's chest and he's got Superman suit on. Oh, God, I nearly wet myself. I was crying so much and I was like, thank you, higher power sent me three superheroes to get me up the hill, man, and they got me up the hill. And I was trying to take a picture because I wanted to put it up on Facebook because no one would believe me. No one, you just couldn't imagine this stuff in all your wildest dreams. And there I was, and I said, I've got to get a picture. He said, you've got to keep going, you've got to keep going. And it was just unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And I'm just like, I was just like, wow. And I looked up and I was like, I'm impressed. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, you really are the governor. You really are the governor. I'm just like, I'm totally powerless. You're just like, and you know, and that stuff is, and that's what happens to me. Those little moments or snippets or things happen and I'm like, wow, it's like, it's the magic or whatever you want to call it, but it's just something that happens and I'm like, it's just so much bigger than me and it's just like, wow. That stuff blows me away. And, you know, I'm grateful to be clean. I'm grateful to go to bed clean. I'm grateful to wake up clean. I'm grateful that I'm not sticking my head in the microwave to have a sneaky line while the kids are getting, you know, like all that stuff I used to do. Yeah, scary, scary. Can you imagine a mum like wired, man, praying to the, oh. And you know, and I've got their best interests at heart today, and yeah, and I'm just really blessed. And just today, like, I got a card from both of my sons, and the little one can't accept the fact that the other one loves me as much as he does, right? And he's so funny, right? So he's, but I love you so much. He's only six. I love you even better than Alex, which is his brother, right? And he's like, I love you better than anyone. I was like, so impressed. And then he's put, and he's drawn a picture of me, Alex, and George, and oh, above Alex, he's put idiot. You know what I mean? It's so brilliant. It's just so brilliant. And it's like, wow, you know what? And he's got such a great sense of humour. So the other one, to get him back, has put, I love you millions and millions. But, like, the thing about it is they're doing this as their little competition thing. But in it, my heart was filled up so much that I've got this love. And that just doesn't even end there. You know, I've got it from everybody that, like, people... Yeah, they've really loved me. And even for all my wonkiness, and I have got a lot of wonky stuff, you know? And I'm done. I better get out of here. Thank you.